everybody. Welcome to Athlete on Fire. I am Scott Jones, your host. Today we have Dre All Day, Dre Baldwin, out of Miami, Florida. He is a former professional basketball player overseas. He is a prolific content creator. You're going to hear in the show how we have a little history. I can't believe it's been almost 7 years since we were podcasting and collaborating on some stuff back in the day. We got to catch up on everything that's happening in his life and how he quit basketball cold turkey, which to me is amazing as a former athlete as well. He's about to have a kid. We talk about the three things that he's not going to let happen based on everything he's heard from friends and family and the culture. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And I think he'll be able to keep his word on that. He puts out so much content. He's written over 20 or 30 books. I can't remember. You'll hear in the show. Pretty amazing. Talk about training mindset a little bit. We talk about leadership and keeping your body right and why he's kind of changed his mentality in business and in life. So I think you guys will really, really appreciate this. At the very least, it was a great conversation. So enjoy this episode, Athlete on Fire. Thanks a lot, y'all. All right, we got Dre Baldwin here from Dre All Day. Work on your game, all this stuff. Man, Dre, how you doing, dude?
I'm doing excellent, Scott. It's been a long time, but it's good for us to connect and catch up. But just working on my game.
Yes, I guess I hear that's you. What you said. Yeah. So if we you just reminded me, like 2015 is when me and you kind of first connected. I was just getting into launching my podcast, Athlete on Fire, and you were working on a lot. Mm-hmm. You'd been doing your stuff for a little while before we caught up. Podcasts were nothing like they are now. Like probably every one of your relatives has two or three podcasts now, you know?
Right. Everybody has a podcast now.
So what's that been like? So we kind of collaborated and I gave you a little push to get going, but what's it been like since we were talking back then?
Yeah. So at that time, just so people understand what it was, that was around 2015. I had appeared as a guest on your podcast and we just got to, I think it was after the recording was over, I was just asking you about how you actually do a podcast, because I thought that podcasting was very, like, super technical and kind of above my abilities. But then you explained to me, like, listen, all you got to do is get a microphone, download Audacity, and boom, you can record your podcast right there. And I said, oh, is that simple? I thought it was, like, more stuff to it. But you showed me that. You showed me the ropes of it. And I went and did that, and I started my podcast in April of 2016, and I started mine as a daily show. So today, we have over 2,200 episodes of my podcast. So I've gone every single day since I launched that podcast. So that's what I've been up to since the last time we connected. I was on your show a couple times, but yeah.
I thought you were doing it every day, and that is just so freaking impressive, man. Is it building certain muscles for personal and business life that you really like about it? Or is it just something like you're doing it now and you just kind of have to do it?
Well, I don't never want to get into that. I never want to get to the point where I feel like I have to and I'm like not excited about it, or I don't feel like it's doing anything for me, because then I'll just stop doing it because I don't have to. You know, I'm not on a contract with Spotify or anything like that. But with mine, one of the things that I like about creating content consistently, Scott, is that I get really good at explaining my concepts and my frameworks, so that when I'm in a conversation with somebody, like for example right here, or I'm talking to a coaching client, or I'm on stage and somebody asks me a question at the Q&A at the end of a keynote or anything like that, the things that because I talk about these things so much, it can just come naturally to me. I don't have to think about what to say because I'm doing it every single day. So I just get better. It's kind of like that 10,000 hours rule. Yeah. You get to put in that proverbial 10,000 hours just explaining your concepts and explaining your philosophies, that you get so good at talking about it that it feels like it's coming natural to the outsider, but they don't know. Like, you're doing this every single day. So that's how I get better at it. It's like practice.
That's such a good point, man. Cause like you can be on some of the socials and something could fire you up a little bit, or you think you have a strong opinion about it. And if you don't start articulating and getting out of your head, it's not always easy to get that point across, you know? I think that's a really good point.
Exactly.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, just the more that you talk about these things, because I think about them in my head and I kind of talk to myself before I get on the microphone and say it. But the more you do that, the better, the more articulate you get, the more succinct you get at making your point. And then by the time you say it publicly and people see it, it's almost like you've been practicing it forever. but you've gone over it so many times. That's how you get good at it. I mean, it's nothing, no substitute for that work.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm sitting here, I'm like, you know, I could just start having a conversation with you for hours, because we have so many similarities in our backgrounds and everything, from team sports to everything else. So really quick, just tell people a little bit about your background, since it has been so long since we've chatted. The basketball background, I love that. I think it's a big part of your story, and kind of it's kind of something you've been focusing on in your own life, just from your socials and stuff, just on evolving a little bit. And I think it's something that athletes have a really freaking hard time with. I know I did, and I only played college ball. And you see pros like get out of whatever league they're in and just really struggle to find themselves. So I think that evolution is interesting. But yeah, take us back a little bit and tell us how you got to where we're at today, and then we'll start chopping it up a little bit more.
Sure, I'll give you the 4-minute version. So come from Philadelphia, now live in Miami, Florida, but always played sports, and then played a little bit of baseball, no touch football. First sport that I tried officially was football, but I never, my family couldn't afford the equipment, so I never really played football. Then I went on and played baseball for a little bit, wasn't good at that. Finally got into basketball around age 14, which is pretty late for someone who's trying to go somewhere in basketball, to college, let alone the pros. Played in high school, I tried out for the team. We only had one team, no JV, no freshman team, just one varsity. I didn't make the varsity team until I was a senior. So I tried out every year, but I only made it 1 year. My senior year, sat on the bench, averaged 2 points a game. So going out of high school into college, I knew for me to play, I would have to walk on. It was, those who don't know what that means, it means you have to, you know, you just literally walk in the gym and try to earn your way, play your way onto the team. So I didn't have a scholarship. Coaches didn't know me. I went to a college that was Division III. Walked on, did make the basketball team, and I actually was a starter my freshman year. Didn't set the world on fire, and again, I'm playing at a school that was actually provisional D3, which means they were on their way to being full-fledged D3. They weren't even full-time D3 yet at that time. You can only play 2 years at that school. This is Penn State Abington, my freshman year. Got recruited to go to Penn State Altoona, which was a full D3 after my freshman year. So my last 3 years, I was at Penn State Altoona. Played okay there. Again, didn't put up amazing numbers, but I did play college basketball, but it's only D3. So I graduated from college. I wanted to play pro, Scott, but again, coming out of a Division III school, especially the conference that I played in, there are some conferences that D3 players actually do go pro, at least get a shot. But the conference that I played in, they didn't really produce pros. So nobody was checking for me when I got out of college. So for me to play pro, I would have to kind of hustle my way into the game. My first year out of school, I worked at Foot Locker as an assistant manager. I worked at Bally Total Fitness selling gym memberships my whole first year. So this is 2004 into 2005, just to give people a time frame here. And I just kept my eye on, all right, how do I get into pro basketball? And it was basically like one source. It was like a little website that basically told you what was going on overseas. And they would have a list of these events that we call exposure camps, which a lot of parents and athletes are familiar with now because they have them in every sport. But back then, they were relatively new. An exposure camp is basically an event where you pay money and a bunch of athletes show up, and is a way for you to get exposed, to get seen and known by people who can maybe help you get to whatever your next level is. And from what I understand, Scott, they have exposure camps now for like high schoolers and college players, not just pros. At the time, the only exposure camps I knew about were for pros. So I found an exposure camp in Orlando, Florida. I saved up my money. It was $250, and I asked them, could I pay in cash? Because I didn't have a credit card or a bank account at the time. And they said, yeah, you can pay in cash. So I had to bring $250 in cash. We drove from Philadelphia to Orlando. Those of you who don't know the geography, that's a 19-hour drive. We left Philly on an afternoon on Friday. As a matter of fact, we couldn't leave till the afternoon because I had to go to my job at Bally and wait for the DHL guy to come with the commission checks, because I needed that check so I could pay my $250 in cash at the door.
You had to be as broke as I was in your early 20s.
Yes. Yes, I was. I was as broke as you were. And I went and cashed that check, not at the bank, but at the Asian check cashing spot that also sold jewelry and a pawn shop at the same time. So I cashed my check there, took that cash. We got in that car. We rented a car. Drove from Philly to Orlando, 19-hour drive, hopped out of the car at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning, which happened to be the start time of the camp. Now, at 23, I could get away with that. Probably couldn't do it now, but did that. It was a two-day camp, exposure camp. I played pretty well there. I got a good scouting report, and I got the footage from that event. And that was important for me because I needed a third-party, independent third-party, basically saying, hey, this guy is good enough to play pro. It's one thing if I'm saying it, another thing somebody else is saying it. So now I had that, went back to Philly. I did not get signed to a contract on the spot in Orlando. Went back to Philly, had to be back at work Monday morning at Bally Total Fitness, selling gym memberships. And what I started doing at that point, Scott, was I started cold calling basketball agents because I figured the only way I could get to play overseas, because at this time, it's not like the Knicks or the Lakers were looking for me. So I figured if the best place I have a chance is to get overseas. So I figured the agents would know somebody because I had barely been out of the state of Pennsylvania, let alone had I been overseas. So I didn't know anybody. Let me get an agent. An agent knows people overseas, and they can vouch for me and help me to get a contract. So I started cold calling basketball agents. And this is going on Google. Mind you, this is 2005. So the internet existed, but it wasn't what it is now. So I'm going on Google just looking up basketball agents, and anyone that I found, I'm talking literally cold calling, picking up the phone. Hello, you don't know me. My name's Dre Baldwin. I have this, 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 and basically pitching myself. And I called about 60 basketball agents. And of the 60 that I called, 20 said, okay, let me see what you got. Because I told them I had footage of myself at an exposure camp. And so they asked me to send them the footage. So I sent footage to 20 basketball agents. Now, I want y'all to understand, this is 2005, summer. This website called YouTube wasn't out. This is not a YouTube link. This was a VHS tape. You remember VHS, Scott? So people I had a double-decker... Yeah, so any of you don't know, any of you millennials don't know what a VHS tape is, Google it or ask your parents, they'll tell you. So I had a double-decker VCR at home, and I was literally taking that master tape from the exposure camp, and I was making copies of my own VHS tape and sending out the copies on my own dime around the world to these basketball agents who said, let me see what you got. So I sent that tape out to 20 people, copies of the tape to 20 people. One agent got back in touch with me after he got the footage. He said, I'll represent you. And that agent helped me get my first contract. That was in late August, early September of 2005. And that was my first basketball contract, Kaunas, Lithuania. So that's how I got on overseas. At the same time, I took that footage, knowing that those of you know VHS, you know, if it gets wet, you leave it in the sun, you could lose it. Anything that happened to that footage. But I needed that footage because that was like my golden ticket to a basketball career. So I took it to an audiovisual store. They put it on a data CD, that footage. And then I took that data CD and I uploaded that footage to this brand new website that said, hey, you can put as much footage up for free as you want. It was called YouTube.com. And that's how people came to know me on the internet was from YouTube, not from overseas basketball, because how many Americans watch basketball overseas? Very few. So I had these two careers kind of going at the same time. I didn't know YouTube would be a thing until about 2009, 2000, and yeah, around 2009. I found myself unemployed from basketball. I've been playing overseas. I played in a few places. But in 2009, I was a free agent with no job. And I'm waiting for the phone to ring. It's not ringing. So I've asked myself, okay, I'm in my mid-20s now. I'm headed towards my 30s. Now, how do I get some control over my life and career? And I thought of two things, Scott. Number one, was back in 2001, I had been introduced to this book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. I'm sure you're familiar with it. A lot of people are. And that book kind of planted the seeds in my mind for entrepreneurship. I didn't know how I would get into it, and I didn't know what I would do, but it was always in my mind. Okay, when I read that book, this is in the middle of my college years, I read the book. I said, I'm going to go do something like this after basketball. I knew after college I would go play basketball, but after basketball I'm going to do this. So I knew I didn't want to work a quote-unquote regular job because all the adults I saw around me who had regular jobs growing up, they were always at work. They talked about work as if it was a necessary evil. They never had any extra time. They never had any extra money. So I said, okay, I don't want to do that. So let me see what Robert Kiyosaki is talking about. So I kept that in my mind. So it came back to me in 2009 when I found myself without a job. And I also had read kind of like the new age version of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which was The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. So when I read that book and combined it with what Robert talked about, I thought to myself, okay, here's what I'll do. Let me put more energy and time into this thing that I have online. Because I had a little bit of an audience from my YouTube videos. I was blogging about my overseas experiences. And I found that people kind of liked the way that I was just sharing stuff. And this is, again, we're barely using the phrase, at this time, we're hardly using the phrase content. The phrase social media was just becoming new. Facebook had just opened up to where anybody could sign up for Facebook. Instagram did not exist yet. Twitter was brand new. So a lot of this stuff was very new. We weren't even using the phrase personal brand. All of this stuff was new. So I had an idea to create a product. I created this $4.99 basketball training program, one for dribbling, one for shooting. And this is based off an idea that Tim Ferriss shared on his blog or in his book. And I put it on a free hosting platform. And this is what he said to do. He said, put the program on one page. Say, this is what it is, here's how much it costs, and put a little button that says, buy now for whatever, $4.99. When somebody clicks on the button, It goes to another page that says, hey, this program is under construction, but if you really want it, put in your email address and we'll email you when it's ready. And Tim Ferriss said, take $5, put it into Google Ads, and drive traffic to that page. And if you get people putting in their email address, then you know you have a viable product. Because one thing, if your audience says they like it, your fans, yeah. But another thing, random people say it. So, and by the way, just as a disclaimer, y'all, you can't get this kind of market research with $5 in Google Ads today. You could do that 10 years ago. You can't do it anymore. All right, so I took that $5 and I got some results. I went and made the program in one day. I put a video on YouTube, say, hey, everybody, I made this new program. Here's where you get it. Go to this website. And people started buying it. So when I made that first sale, $4.99 in 2009, I said, Scott, this is what I need to be doing. This is what I'm going to do. Because, at that time, I was a great athlete and I could run and jump and dunk and all that stuff. But I knew I couldn't do that forever. I knew at some point that ball is going to stop bouncing. But I could always use my, what we now know as intellectual property. Again, I didn't know that phrase back then either. But I could always trade off my brain. I couldn't always trade off my physical abilities. So that's how I knew that what I was going to be doing when I got done playing ball. Now, the good news is I did get another call eventually and kept playing overseas. I kept playing basketball until 2015, but I kept making videos on YouTube. At this time, I started writing books because now self-publishing is becoming more ubiquitous. And I would start talking about mindset. This is the other piece here, the third piece of this triangle, is these basketball players who were watching me on YouTube, they would start asking questions about my background because they're like, who is this random guy on the internet who's putting up videos on how to practice basketball? Now, he clearly knows how to play. He's good, but we never heard of him before. He's not on TV. Who is this guy and why is he doing this? So they would ask me about my background, and when I would tell them the same stuff that I told you, at least on the basketball side, they would say, well, man, why did you keep working out? Why did you keep trying out for the basketball team? How did you get the confidence to believe in yourself even though you were facing all these setbacks? That led to me doing every Monday, I would do this video called The Weekly Motivation. And that was just me doing a selfie video. This is before we had cameras on the phone. So this is literally with a camera, $100 camera. I would do this 2 to 3 minute selfie video where I would just talk about a mindset tactic, like showing up every day doing the work or believing in yourself, or would you be ready for your best opportunity if it got presented to you right now? Just little mindset things. I did that every Monday, Scott, for 400 Mondays in a row. And those weekly motivation videos became the foundation of what I do now. Yeah. So in 2015, when I stopped playing basketball, I already knew what I was going to do. Because when I was making those weekly motivation videos, I started to draw an audience of people who didn't play ball. They would find me on YouTube and they would say, well, look, I don't play basketball, Dre. I'm not trying to make the NBA. But those weekly motivation videos, those apply to everybody. You don't have to play ball to learn from that. So that told me that people actually saw value in this mindset piece. I thought it was just normal. I thought this was the way everybody thought, but I realized it wasn't. So when I stopped playing in 2015, I said, I'm just going to take the mindset piece. I'm going to do that because I never saw myself as just being a basketball guy. I didn't want to limit myself to the sports scene. I wanted to expand and reach bigger audiences because, again, Robert Kiyosaki, Tim Ferriss, like, they were reaching bigger audiences than just athletes. So that's what I decided to do in 2015 when I stopped playing. That's around the time that we connected. Yeah. And, that's what I've been doing for the last 7 years is taking this whole all that stuff that I talked about and basically molding it into a system and a framework that is called Work on Your Game. And most of the people I work with today are not athletes. They're not basketball players. They are professionals. They're entrepreneurs out there. And I'm just helping them get systematic in what they're doing, of course, with mindset as the foundation, but really just helping people with systems and accountability. And that's how we got here. That was more than 4 minutes, but
no, that's good, man. Because honestly, I don't think I don't even think, like, the first time we talked, I would have remembered your Philly story driving down, because that's freaking amazing. And then I don't know, I think the fact that you didn't think that your mindset was anything unique until people started telling you that, because, you know, I know so many athletes that played at high levels, and back in the early 2000s, like, to send out VHSs and to make 60 or 70 cold calls, like, that was not easy. And the type of persistence, I mean, that's just something you were born with, man. Like, it's freaking awesome. I love that story.
Thank you.
You know, for others, there's other sports where you just don't have the opportunity. Basketball's played all around the world, which is really cool. You could go play overseas, and it's just cool how that kind of launched your career. I read all the same books, man. I mean, I feel like we have so many similarities. Like, I remember reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, and, like, I know people who've gone to, like, some of the conferences, and it's really hokey, and they try to sell stuff to you and all that stuff. But if you just read the book and you take the information from that, it's pretty good stuff, because it kind of speaks to the only way that you could get good information back in the day. It's if you just happen to know somebody who had parents who were successful. Like, if me or you just played ball where we played ball in normal schools with, you know, semi-normal families or whatever, the ability to access successful people was almost impossible if you weren't in those circles already. The ability to, like, meet wealthy people or, you know, business owners, I didn't meet any of those people until I was in my mid-20s, you know? And I think that's what's really cool about what we can do in 2022 for people who come from different backgrounds and just don't have an idea of how to get out of their situation. Like, the information's there for them. You just got to be able to take action. And it looks like every step along the way, you're just kind of taking action at the next level. I mean, the fact that you only scored a couple points a game in high school and you could only play your senior year, and I know how good you were, that's just crazy to me, you know? It's pretty cool. It's a great story, man.
Thank you.
So this is kind of like the evolution of the athlete, right? It's so hard because you see yourself as an athlete. You're in the gym working on one thing every single day. When you get on the court, you're working on one thing, and you're just so focused for so long. And that's where you want to put all of your energy. But then, like, for you, it was 2015. You retired. What have been some of the biggest lessons about yourself you've learned over those years? As a human being, and as how, you know, how to see yourself, your identity, and stuff like that. I think that lesson's important for people out there who are trying to transition from different sports and different parts of their life, you know?
Yeah, so the biggest thing for especially athletes coming out of sports, especially if you play at the collegiate level and the pro level, because when you play in college, it's almost like a job in itself. And at the pro level, is that you're going to have to pay your dues and put the time in to build a business the same way that you paid your dues and put the time in to build an athletic career. And it's a challenge. The reason, and that seems like, you know, quote unquote common sense, Scott, but the reason why it's a challenge for athletes is because when you're an athlete, your work day is like 2 hours, right? A long day is like 4 hours.
Yeah.
But when you're an entrepreneur, there is no day. No. Yeah, it's like one long day. It never ends. Yeah. Even when you stop working, it's not because you did all the work. It's just because you need to stop. Like, you got to take care of your kids, you got your family, you got to go to sleep, you got to go to the bathroom, you got to take a shower, right? But it's not because the work's done. All right, the work, there's no end to the work when you become an entrepreneur, when you start doing your own thing. And it'd be much easier for any of us to go get a job, because we know we clock in at 9, you clock out at 5, and you can forget about it. But when you run a business, it's all on you, and you could always be doing something. Even if you have a team, there's always some other thing you could be doing to make it better or push it forward. So the thing that athletes need to accept, if you're going to go from being an athlete to being an entrepreneur, is that your work time is going to quadruple, and you had to put that time in. The same way you put time into being an athlete, you got to put the same time into being a business person.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. Probably right around when we first talked, 14, 15, somewhere in there. I had I was still playing hoops pretty consistently. It was the sport I went to college for baseball, but I was addicted to basketball, like a lot of athletes get, you know? And I would still go play for, I had two kids at the time. I'd still go play for a couple hours at lunch. And then, you know, your energy would be down when I got back to the computer or back to my clients or whatever it was. And I had a little knee tweak like in 15 or 16, and it sat me down for about 3 months, and I was so freaking productive when I went away from the court, you know? I was like, oh, this is not a coincidence. I mean, income went 2 or 3x, and like energy for my work went so much higher. Have you had any moments like that where you just realized, like, man, I love the sport and I love the process, but it's not serving me like it used to?
Yeah, well, when I stopped playing basketball, Scott, I stopped cold turkey.
Did you really?
I didn't go. Yes, I did. So around the time when we first connected, I probably was either about to be done playing, or I know my last games were in 2015. So I played in a couple of money tournaments in the United States in 2015. It was actually around this time of year. And the last money tournament I played in, my team won. And that was the last official basketball game I have played. I didn't play any pickup. I don't play pickup basketball. I haven't played anybody one-on-one. I don't go to the court and shoot around, none of that. So after that game and I won, I said, this is it. I'm walking away like Michael Jordan if he hadn't played for the Wizards. I said, that's it. I'm done. So 2015 was the last. Yeah, 2015 was the last game that I actually played of basketball. I have not played a single game since.
And you haven't shot around or anything?
I would go to the court and shoot around every once in a while, but I wouldn't even shooting around. I'm not even jumping. Like, I'm shooting shots without jumping.
Were you just beat up or what? Were you pretty beat up physically or?
No, I wasn't beat up physically. I was actually in good. I never had a serious injury as a basketball player. Yeah. The worst I ever had was a knee tendonitis in college, and I missed like 10 days. That was the worst injury I ever had. But for me, Scott, the thing was, I didn't want to be the old guy. Like, I'll tell you a story.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear this.
When I was like 16, there was this guy who lived, all the adults around me were about, my parents had me and my sister when they were about 20, 21. So all the adults in my neighborhood, they were about 20 years older than me. So when I was 16, me and my friends, of course, we played basketball. And then the adults, the men, they were like 35. So they were still older. They were young enough to keep playing. And we were young enough to kind of play against them. So they see us playing and they say, man, y'all know how to play. Y'all got to learn all this. So there was this guy that lived down the street from me. His name was Guy. So we called him Mr. Guy. He was about 35 and he had a son, but his son was way younger. He had his kids older. So his son was maybe, he had a son who was maybe like 2 or 3 years old. But he would see us and he would watch us play and say, man, y'all know how to play. Y'all got to learn it. So one day I'm at the local rec center, which is like 3 minutes from my house. And I'm inside watching a men's summer league basketball game, and Mr. Guy was playing in the game. So I had never seen him play because he had always critiqued us, but I never saw him play. So I'm watching him play. And again, he's about 35 at this time, young enough to keep playing. And he has this big knee brace on, and he's playing. And I remember he starts the game, and early in the game, he goes for like a rebound, and he lands, and he like hurt his knee. He tweaked his knee, like you talked about. And he has his big knee brace on, and then he pulls himself out of the game. He calls for a sub, and he sits down on the bench, and he's like grabbing his knee, and you could tell he's in pain. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, man, I never want to be that. Yeah. I never want to be the old guy on the court who's looking like, and then you got the young kids looking at him like, man, he used to be good. No, he ain't good anymore. He used to be. I never wanted to be the used to be guy. I didn't want to be out there knowing that I had played at the pro level. I didn't want to be 37 playing against some kid 22 and he's running past me, dunking on me, jumping over me for rebounds. And I'm looking at this kid like, man, when I was 27, I would have kicked your ass. But now you're kicking my ass because I'm not good anymore. I didn't want to be that guy. So when I got done, I said, all right, I want to leave where I can still be dominant and good because I didn't want to just slowly get worse. No, I can't be out there. I couldn't be out there like that because if I get in there and I start playing, then I got to really play, Scott. Like, I'm going to be in there twice a day working out, doing the drills and all that stuff. I didn't want to do that because I know how I'll get, and that becomes a commitment, and I didn't want to do that, and I don't want to be a casual player.
So that's
why I stopped playing.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of like eating like a really good steak at a nice steakhouse and then and then deciding to go to McDonald's afterwards. For some reason,
yeah, or steak 'ems.
Leaving that bad taste in your mouth of just like what you used to be. You see it all the time, though. That's a good mentality. I like that. Like I mentally have a couple boys. Like one of them seems pretty interested in basketball and just sports in general. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saving my legs just to be able to go out there and dribble around, pass. So when he's in high school and stuff, I can at least do that stuff. So. The sport beats your body up for sure. So I think you made a good decision on a couple psychology and the physicality of it all. So what are you doing physically now? Like how are you taking care of yourself?
Well, now I do, I got a boxing trainer, so I do boxing. I'll do some sparring, but not too much. I was talking to one of my coaching clients because sometimes I post the pictures or the videos on social media. He was asking me, are you going to do a lot of sparring? I said, well, a little bit, but not too much. I make money off my face, so I can't be out here risking it in a boxing ring. I like to run, so that's the other thing I like to do. So I actually just ran. I took a week off last week, and I ran again this morning. But the Miami summers are so humid, it's crazy. It's like 82 degrees in the morning. Yeah. And I run at like 4 in the morning, but the humidity is so ridiculous. And all the races are in the falls and the spring. So my last 10K, I like the 10K distance. So I've done 2 marathons. Completed both of those, but I like 10K. That works because I can run a 10K in the morning and not be dead for the rest of the day. My last 10K, my last three races, I came in my age group, first, third, and first. So I won my last one in my age group, and it's because I just turned 40 this year.
Nice, congrats.
So thank you. The last race I won was the first one in the 40 to 44 age bracket, so I killed those guys. those geezers. Yeah. So now I got 2 more this year in November because all the races are in like November and then like up through April in Miami. They don't do anything in the summer. So that's what I like to do now to stay in shape. But I work out every day.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Did you find like running was pretty easy after playing ball so much?
Yeah, surprisingly. I didn't think it would be because I always was under the mentality that I was always under the impression that concrete would beat up your knees. Basketball players, we always think that concrete beats up your knees. But then when I stopped playing ball and I started like running on concrete just to see, I found out concrete doesn't bother my knees at all. It was basketball that was beating up my knees. It wasn't the concrete. It was all the stopping and the starting and all the force you put on your knees like that, the movements. But just running in a straight line is easy.
It's such a myth that running is bad for your knees. I mean, I coach 20 or 30 runners at a time, even right now, and nobody has issues with their knees. Other things, yeah, for sure. Hey, right. So speaking about evolving and getting out of your comfort zone and stuff, 10K, yeah, I mean, that relates pretty well to your basketball background. Marathon, did you run on road, the marathons?
Yeah, this is Miami Marathons. Yeah, I'll say.
When are you going to go hit an ultra for the first time?
Never.
What?
How long is an ultra?
Well, typically, like the first, anything over a marathon is considered an ultra. So 50K is like 31 miles.
Oh, no, that's crazy. I'm not doing that. Too much training, Scott. That's the problem. I could probably do it, but the training is ridiculous.
Well, there's a couple.
I don't have the time.
There's a couple myths. Okay, so if you can train for a marathon, you can train for an ultra. Because time on feet, similar. Usually the surface is easier. It's usually on trails and stuff like that, so it's not as much pounding on pavement and stuff. I'm just planting a little seed, man. I think you need that seed planted here.
I don't know, man. Because now, once I got a kid on the way, so I want to introduce him to basketball. So if he wants to play ball, I'm not going to be out there playing, but I'll be taking him to the court. And then just the marathons. Even when I was training for the marathon, Scott, just the time it takes to run. Even if I did a 10-mile run,
it's like
90 minutes. And then the time that I need to recover, by the time I actually get to work, I've eaten up a lot of time I need to be like doing this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's what's kept me from doing it.
No. So you're about to have a kid in a couple weeks, you told me, right?
Yes.
All right. So I got to hear a couple things. So what are some things about your life you think will change based on knowing people that have had kids and stuff like that? And what are some things that you hear people say, but you don't think it's really going to affect you? I'm just kind of curious your thought on it, because it's always interesting to talk to people right before they have them, you know?
Yeah, good question. No, and I'm going to throw a question back to you on that. So first of all, let's talk about the things that people are telling me are going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. So one is the dad bod. That's absolutely not happening. No. I guarantee that's not happening.
No,
I will always be in shape. I'm an athlete. That's part of my identity. So I will never have a – do you ever see that picture when Kobe Bryant was like 30 pounds overweight?
No, I have not.
You never saw that picture? So it was a picture. Somebody had took a picture of Kobe. He was at the pool, and he had like a stomach, a gut. And then Kobe had – this is before he passed, of course. And then he had like posted the picture like, LOL, give me a month. I'll get back in shape. But people were like making fun of him because he had the dad bod. But I'm never going to get the dad bod. I will always be in shape. Another one is people are saying, well, you're not going to get any sleep your first year. You're not going to be able to get any sleep, which may happen. I may not get sleep. Well, we can't control what the baby does, but that's not going to stop me from doing my work.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
Oh, I said the sleep is a coin flip. Just depends on the kid, I think.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah, exactly. So I'm still going to get my sleep and I'm still going to do my workouts. I don't care if I don't get sleep or not. I will still get in the gym. And I actually talked to one of my clients. He got a dog, and a dog is kind of like a baby in that he got a puppy. He's not getting his sleep. And I tell him, like, look, maybe you can't get a 45-minute workout in, but you could at least do 20. All right, do something. Just keep the streak going and stay in shape. So those are the top two that I've heard that – It's hard to stay in shape. Oh, and also the other thing is I have a lot of female friends who have kids, and they always make the excuse, well, we don't stay in touch with our friends because we have kids. And they say, oh, Dre, it's the only reason you can stay in touch and you can stay on top of communication because you don't have kids. Wait till you have kids, and then you'll realize. And that's not going to happen. I'm not going to let that happen because, I mean, life is all about relationships. So I won't let my relationship slip and then use my kids as – I can't use my kids as an excuse for not staying in touch with my friends. So those are the top three. Sleep, the dad bod, and staying in touch with my friends.
No, those are good. I think you're right, too.
Yeah.
Because before I had kids, I had a lot of the same stuff. Oh, you know, it's going to be impossible to stay in shape. It's like, do you know what I do for a living? Like, there's no way in hell that's going to happen. Now, you have your ups and downs. The sleep thing, you work your ass off. You're not going to miss your work and all that stuff. The friends is just cop out. Now, what I will say is yes, that is. What I will say about that is, like, some friends that don't have kids won't engage you the same as they did before because they assume they have make assumptions. So I think you just gotta communicate that to them, like, hey, I'm still here for you. I still want to do a lot of the same things. That kind of happens a little bit, but then, you know, friends kind of come and go too. Through different stages of life. I like that.
Right.
What did you say you had a question before you got into that? You said you kind of had a.
Yeah. So I wanted to know what happened with you when you had your kids. Your kids are still relatively young. So did you gain 20 pounds? Did you, as far as the sleep, how'd that go? How'd you manage it? Cause you kind of went through two different phases because your kids are far enough apart that it happened twice and then staying in touch with your people.
Yeah. I mean, I would say my wife definitely lost a lot more sleep than I did. I mean, I can't feed the baby.
Yeah, I anticipate that.
You know, right. It's like, so what I always tell other men is like, yeah, in my opinion, your job is to try to support your wife as much as you can, because there's just things you can't do. And honestly, like, yeah, you're going to love your kid when the day it comes, but you're not going to feel as connected until a year or two in, just because the engagement increases for the dad, I think, once they start moving around a little bit more and when you can actually give them a little peace. But yeah, a couple things, like when I worked out changed. So in the mornings, like I still to this day, I love working with clients one-on-one. I still do it. So I wouldn't get up at 5 to go work out. I'd sleep a little bit longer and then go do my work. And then I'd have a couple buddies meet me at like 7 o'clock at night and we'd work out for an hour or two once or twice a week. So, you know, my workouts changed, the time of day changed. But yeah, I always stay in shape in some way, shape or form. Like I go through seasons, like right now I'm running a lot and I'm still doing strength, but it's not as much as in the winter time. I do a lot more strength and more power type stuff. So I've always been like that, but no, I think a lot of the stuff that people kind of tell you, especially from your background, being competitive and athletic and entrepreneurial, it's just BS. I mean, people are making excuses before they even experience the thing. And, you know, I have friends that are single without kids and they're like, well, I don't know if this is I can't say this because I don't have kids. I was like, yes, you can, because I said it before I had it and I was right.
Right.
It doesn't really limit you as much as you think. And you want to do all the things that you're saying and you want to keep all these things at a high level because your son is going to be watching you. And if you're letting yourself go and you're not making good relationships and you're not having friends and you're not sleeping like you should and working like you should, then your kid's going to see that. They don't care what you say. They care what you do. So you're going to be freaking solid, dude. I'm excited for you. It's a different world. It's a different world for sure. It's a different world, but, pregnancy's going well. Everything's going solid.
Yeah. Everything is going good. We just talking with the midwife just last week. So yeah, everything's looking good.
Sweet. Okay. So kind of talked about evolution a little bit and, your evolution and the fact that you stopped cold turkey from basketball is freaking hilarious to me. The baby's coming. We talked about some of this stuff in the old days. So what are you doing now? You are a prolific content creator, dude. I mean, how many books have you written to date?
31.
31 books. Like I haven't written one yet. I can't even get my head around that. Do you like the process so much, or do you get an idea and you're like, I have to write about this idea? Like how's it work for you?
I used to get that. Like, I get the idea and I'm like, I absolutely have to write about it. But I've written so many now that I don't always think, when I get an idea, I don't immediately think a book now. I don't immediately think a book. Often I think about, like, it's basically levels to it. So I might get an idea, for example, Scott, and that could be a tweet or a status update on Facebook. Then if it's a little bit bigger, it might be a 7-minute YouTube video. A little bit bigger, I might make a podcast episode out of it. A little bit bigger, maybe it becomes I might make a course out of it, something like that. A little bit bigger than that, then maybe it can become a book. So that's kind of like the hierarchy that I use when it comes to that. I have plenty of ideas for books that I could make. I could write 100 books if I wanted to, just, you know, take a lot of ideas that I have and just expand them into books. But just putting a book together is a very time consuming thing. And I also just want to think about the return on investment. Yeah. I get a much higher return on investment creating and selling other things besides books. So yeah. I like books, but if I just had to weigh versus the what I had to put in versus what I can get back, I can get a higher ROI out of other things besides just books.
Yeah, so I was actually going to ask you a question that has to do with that. Without talking numbers, we'll talk percentages. Like if we look at a pie chart of of how you make money, how you make an income. Where would the percentages go? Like 2% in the books, 20 from speaking, 30 from clients. Like, just kind of curious.
Well, I can do a lot with the book simply because I have so many and I use sales funnels. So I can have somebody can come into my funnel and I say, all right, get the book free, just cover the shipping, but they'll leave with 12 books so they can buy the funnels. So I can make a lot with books just based on how much advertising, how much I want to spend on ads. So I would say between coaching and masterminds, that is a good 50 to 60%.
Nice.
Then the books can take up another 20 to 30%. And again, this can fluctuate depending on what I want to spend on ads. And then the rest can be like outside stuff like consulting, speaking gigs, etc. Courses, things like that.
Nice. What do you enjoy the most out of those three?
What do I enjoy the most? Probably the coaching and the masterminds, because in my experience as an entrepreneur, and Scott, you probably had the same experiences. I've talked to enough people to know. The people who spend the most money give you the fewest headaches, interestingly enough.
Crazy how that works.
And is the people who spend the least amount of money actually do the most complaining and are the most pains in the asses. So actually, whoever spend the most money,
those you know are the why, easiest to work with. Don't you think because people who spend the money, like they have that direct connection to the time that it took to make that money, and they understand time and how important it is. Don't you think that's it?
That's part of it, yes. And also they're invested. When somebody puts that kind of money up into something, they are like, okay, this absolutely has to work. So yeah, they are more inclined to listen to what you say and more inclined to do what you tell them to do than the person who only spent $10.
Yeah.
Even though you give them the exact same information.
You know, coaching a lot of clients virtually, for big goals, a lot of endurance athletes, but just athletes in general. And you know, it always seeps into personal life, but you definitely see the commitment. And I always tell people, it's like, this is a different way of coaching. Like back in the day when we were coming up, like coaching was you go to a place and somebody tells you how to do something, you know? But right, if you're not getting the work done, it's equivalent of showing up to like the basketball court, you know, you as the coach showing up to the basketball court and having no players come into the gym to get coached. And I always try to frame my coaching early on as like, you got to show up. I'm not going to be there in Florida or DC or wherever in the world you are that I'm coaching. You've got to show up and do the work. I'm just programming it for you. What are some things that you've done with clients that really help them kind of get that concept into their mind? You know, like how do you get the results from people?
The biggest thing with me and the biggest thing that people come to me for is, of course, I mean, mindset is part of it, but honestly, mindset is part of any kind of coaching. It doesn't matter what you're doing, whether you're teaching someone, an athlete, an entrepreneur, somebody's trying to build a business. Mindset is going to be a piece of any kind of coaching. But the biggest thing with me is strategy, Scott, is that people want to make sense of what they're doing. They want to have a process, a framework, a strategy, a system that they can follow consistently so that when things go off script, things get off kilter, things get haywire, they can just plug into the process. Okay, what do I need to do next? What's the next step here? What's the next step? What's the next step? And then when things are crazy, to have someone that they can talk to, just a calming voice that says, okay, let's take all these 8 things you got going on and let's put these things into perspective so that you can kind of relax and not feel like you're overwhelmed. Because the thing about the overwhelm, and a lot of high-performing athletes, entrepreneurs, professionals, they get into sometimes it's a state of overwhelm simply because they take on so much. But overwhelm is just a state of mind. Overwhelm is not something that actually happens to you. Overwhelm is a way of thinking about all the stuff you have going on. But if you can compartmentalize things and do them one at a time and get strategic about them and systematic about them, then you can focus on doing one thing at a time. It's the only thing a human being can do anyway. Physically, psychologically, scientifically. So that's really the big thing with me is people just want the system and the process that they can follow consistently.
Hey, tell me a good success story from when you're from a client or somebody you've been involved with recently here. Do you have any good ones?
Yeah, I was just talking to a client today and he was feeling a bit overwhelmed because he had a lot going on. He's a guy, he's a type A type of guy who takes on things. He's a leader in his community and his business and his family, so people always coming to him for stuff and he takes it on because he knows he's capable of doing it. And one of the challenges that he had, now we talked about a lot of things, but one of the challenges was he just wanted to get in physical shape. He wasn't in the kind of shape he wanted to be in. He was probably around 300 pounds, former athlete himself, not basketball, but football. So he's probably around 300 pounds. He wanted to get back around that 240-ish range. And we've had it's been a lot of ups and downs, a lot of challenges, whether it's life stuff, family stuff, career stuff, business stuff, all kinds of stuff he's had to take on over time. But he just touched under 260 just about 10 days ago. So that was a big win for him. And that's like the biggest, most important thing for him amongst all the stuff that he has going on. His career, he's a leader in his business. He's the breadwinner for his family. He has kids who are both school age. And all of the stuff that he has going on, the biggest thing for him is I really want to hit that number when it comes to my weight. And there's been so many challenges in that. So work challenges, feeling stressed, not being able to sleep. Got to deal with this thing at work. Got to get rid of this person. Got to bring this person on. All of this different stuff. So just being able to hit that number, and we're not done, but still working on it. But just being able to hit that number was a big milestone for him amongst, and it's interesting, Scott, because all the other things that he has going on, the kind of revenue that he generates and the business that he works in and all that stuff, you would think that would be the most important thing. For someone from the outside looking in, you would think that's what they would focus on. But his thing is, I just want to get in shape. I want to feel that confidence that comes with being in the kind of shape that I want to be in. And even though I'm not a personal trainer, it's helping him stay focused and having a system for how you're going to work out, what are you putting in your body, not making wrong decisions. That was really the most important thing for him. So it's interesting that from the outside looking in, sometimes we look at people and we think, well, that's the thing that stands out about them. You think that's what they care the most about, but it's actually often something different.
Yeah. Well, and that's probably a bottleneck for him. And it's a bottleneck for a lot of high performers.
Right.
You can't take care of yourself, man. You're not taking care of the people that you need to. No matter how much you can fake it and how tired you can work through these things and how many times you can go eat the wrong meal, it's almost impossible to take care of this thing. So his energy is going to go up. He's going to produce even at a higher level. So I think really diving into that part is pretty cool.
Exactly.
It's tough, man. The culture does not lend to healthy living. If you haven't noticed, it's not really doing that for people.
Okay, be intentional.
I have a couple more questions for you. If you go back to back in the mid 2000s, 06, 07, whenever you posted the $5 tester to get the emails and stuff, we'll call that like the beginning of your business career, kind of based on your story. Yeah. And then we have today. If you had a graph in front of us, like what does it look like from a success standpoint? Is it up two steps, down one, up three, down two, or is it just like a steady growth? Or was it like down for 10 years and then just hockey stick growth? Like what did it look like for you?
Well, it went up probably for the first from 2009 to, that's when I first put the program out, to about 2013. It was going up pretty steadily, just on the business side of things, not talking basketball, simply because I was using YouTube as a lead generation source. I wasn't even running ads, and people would just watch my basketball video on YouTube, and then they go buy my programs off my website. And this is before everybody was on YouTube. Just now everybody has a podcast. Everybody got on YouTube probably around 2014, moving on. And at the same time, YouTube flipped their algorithm to where people like me were getting penalized for it, taking people off of YouTube onto our own websites. So they got hit to that. They got hit to what I was doing. So for that first 4 years, it was going really, really smooth, to the point I'm like, look, if I don't sign another basketball contract, so what? I'm just selling all these programs. It doesn't even matter. So then YouTube started getting smarter to that. I was still selling, but it wasn't coming as easily. I wasn't getting leads as easily around 2014, 2015. Then when I started, so around that time, 14, 15, it started to go down as far as success, because not only was it harder to sell the basketball training programs, I was now getting out of basketball and I was trying to figure out who I was and what I was going to do as an entrepreneur, a non-basketball playing entrepreneur. And since I wasn't on a court every day, I wasn't drawing as many basketball fans to my material, because I wasn't out there just putting myself out as the basketball guy every day anymore. So my first idea actually was I was going to talk about how to market yourself through YouTube videos. I was going to be like a marketing expert type guy. But when I started looking into that, I realized that really wasn't for me. I didn't want to stay on top of it as much, as quickly as that stuff changes. I didn't want to be on top of that kind of stuff. So that was 2014, 15 was a little bit slower. Then around 2016, 17, things started to pick up again, because 16, 17, that's when I started talking about Let me blow my nose.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So 2016-17, that's when I did a TED Talk. I've done four TED Talks, but I did one in late 2015, then I did two in 2016 that were all around mindset. So I talked about discipline and confidence in those talks. And in those talks, that's when I realized, okay, this is what I need to be talking about, this mindset piece. Because again, I didn't know that just talking about that alone was that valuable, because I thought this was a normal way of thinking. But when I put it out there and I saw how people were responding to it, I said, okay, this is new to people. So that's when I said, okay, I can actually do this as my main thing. So yeah. In 2016-17, things started to pick up a little bit more because people saw me as that guy who could teach them mindset. And again, these are people who weren't basketball players. And it was very important to me, Scott, to establish myself as someone who could serve people who didn't play basketball. And I didn't want to be pigeonholed into the basketball space. So that was 16-17. Then around 18-19, things got a little bit slower again, because I kind of had that kind of like that beginner's not luck, but like when you first start something, it's kind of like the new thing. So it was doing well then. Then 2018-19, it got a little bit slower, and I had to kind of re-educate myself. I decided, let me just go back. Let me read books again. Let me get more marketing education. Let me go to some conferences. Let me sign up for some courses. So I was kind of re-educating myself in 2019. Then, of course, 2020, you get COVID. So there was no – because I was doing a lot of speaking. From 16 through 19, I was doing a lot of speaking gigs. So then – 2020, you get COVID, so there's no speaking gigs. So that's when I started learning more about running advertising and things like that. How can I use ads and, you know, profitably to actually make money on selling my programs online? So 2020 was a learning year. At the same time, I was just trying to figure out what exactly do I want to do here, because without the speaking gigs, or how am I going to teach this mindset thing? How am I going to get this out here? Because that's how I was doing. I was doing speaking. So without that, how am I going to do this? And I thought maybe I'll just go into this niche of overseas basketball, teaching basketball players how to play overseas, because I can dominate that niche. I can still dominate it to this day. The problem is not a lot of money in that pool. That was just a very shallow pool. There's no money to be made. So I got out of that in 2020. Then going back into 2021, really just figuring out what is it that people really want from me, because I've written all these books. I played basketball. I got the mindset piece. But what I found when I really started talking about it is people love the system. So they saw how consistent I was and the things that I was doing. They want to know, how are you consistent? So I just started talking about, well, I just put a system together. Okay, every day I follow this routine. I follow this system. I follow this process. How do you put out a podcast every day? How do you make all these YouTube videos? How do you write so many books? And I said, well, I just get a process and I just follow that process over and over again. Again, this is kind of that case of you not knowing how valuable your own knowledge is, because to us, to individually, we think it's just a normal thing because we do it naturally. So when I started sharing it with people and I saw people were like, oh, well, I want to learn how to do that. That's when I learned that it's really the systems that people want from me. So my thing now going into 2022 is mindset, strategy, accountability, execution. That's what my stuff is all about. So going into 2022, it started to pick up more, because now I've really started to get more strategic, Scott, about who is my target audience, who specifically do I want to target, and I still can get a lot better in really targeting the right type of people and being able to sell more high ticket stuff more consistently. And really, I want to get to the point where it's much more predictable, where I know exactly who I'm selling to and how much of it I can sell. So that's the story that continues to be written.
Yeah, it's such a huge part of anybody's journey who's trying to do this stuff online, especially, is you think you're in the spot that you're going to be in for the next 10 years, and then something happens and something just clicks. You're like, wait, I just need to change a little bit, you know? When I started Athlete on Fire, it was really just, it was a creative outlet. It was a good way to network. I was putting out tons of content in the beginning, but you know, me and my wife had this one talk. She's like, you're putting a lot of time into this, but like, for it to be sustainable, you have to make money. I think a lot of people forget that aspect of any of these endeavors. You said, you could dominate the space of getting kids overseas to play ball, but I mean, those kids are just like you were when you were trying to pull that $250 cash out of the pawn shop.
Yeah, don't have any money.
Like, there's not much there. Yeah. So you got to find ways to make things really work long term, and you also got to put your head down and make sure you're doing it every day. There's a stat that always drove me when I first started, and it's pretty accurate still this day. But something like 90% of podcasters don't get past episode 7. pretty crazy.
Yeah, I believe that.
Pretty crazy.
I believe that.
All right, yeah. Last quick hitters here. Who is inspiring you out there on the socials that people should follow right now? You got any good followers out there for people to listen to or watch?
People who I follow on social media?
Yeah.
I just open my Instagram, see who I see here. This guy I like is I like Zuby. You know Zuby?
I like Zuby a lot. He's good.
Yeah, I've actually been on his podcast. I like his stuff, and we have some similar thoughts, but he articulates his in a completely different way than me.
Yeah,
and I like his I like his approach.
Nice. I'll have to check out that episode for sure.
Yeah.
Where can everybody find you, man? You've been working so hard on this stuff. Sometimes I have a hard time keeping up with you because you're so prolific with your content. But where do you want people to go check out?
Where should I tell people to go? Well, I give them two. So one is my Instagram. I use Instagram stories a lot all day. So that's probably the place where I'm probably open that app the most just because I use the Instagram stories. My Instagram is just Drury Baldwin. And I just launched a second YouTube channel because I found that the YouTube algorithm doesn't like when you mix kind of topics on one channel. So I'm going to launch my second YouTube channel, which is YouTube/Drury All Day. And I'm going to put all my mindset material on that one channel. So I'm basically going to move everything over, which is technically impossible. Basically, I got to re-upload all of that stuff to a new channel. So that's what another project I'll be working on.
Nice, man. Well, dude, it was great catching up with you and seeing where you're at. Congrats on the baby coming. I can't wait to interview you again in like 4 months to see how everything's going. I don't think the dad bod's
coming. Let's do it.
Awesome, man. Thanks a lot. Hey, y'all, thanks for listening to Drury Baldwin. Go check out his stuff. Appreciate it.